Great. Well, welcome everybody. I'd like to welcome you to our second conference call for RF102, which is Get to Know Your Community. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Kwamundun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. And it's great to see so many of you on the call today and also in the chat, because that gives you the option of reading the questions and answering either in the chat or as we go around our circle. So our agenda today will be like most of our conference calls. We're going to start with our introduction so that we get to know who's on the call. And I still have a hard time sometimes putting names to voices, so this is why I always start with introductions. We'll do a brief overview of some of the content for this week, and then we're going to talk about some strategies that we can use that help us respond to what are the characteristics of our community are. Not so much the facts and stats like we looked at last week, but more the characteristics and how we can make sure that recreation in our communities is inclusive and accessible and meaningful to the people who live there. So last week in our circle, we went in the order that you joined the call, and we're going to do the same today too. And then for our next call, we're going to pick a different strategy. So it's not always the person who phones in first who goes first. So to help us with the strategy for next week, when you do your introduction today, I'd like to ask you to add, if you know the answer, the population of your community. And I guess, Rebecca, I know you're in Newfoundland. You can either choose the community where you are right now or one of the communities where you lived in Nunavut. That's totally okay. So the question is, please introduce yourself with your name, your community, your territory, and then tell us how many people live in your community. So just to give you a chance to think about that, I'll start first, and then we'll go to Tim and then David. And Tim, maybe you can help me as we go post the order in the chat so that we can see that. So I'm Caroline. I think most of you know me. I'm based out of Whitehorse, and I think our population is somewhere around 35,000. It's grown a lot. When I first moved to Whitehorse, it was 19,000. So Whitehorse has grown a lot. So over to you, Tim.
Thanks, Carol. It's Tim Van Dam. I'm in Sumbaque, Yellowknife, in the Northwest Territories. And our population is 21,720.
Wow, that's precise. Thanks, Tim. That's great. Okay, we're going to go to David, and then after David, we'll go to Lorianne and Jennifer, and then Rebecca, Trista, Serena, Scott. So over to you, David.
Okay, I'm David Jennings. David Jennings, Whitehorse. My statistics say 34,467. But I'm sure that's wrong because people have been born recently. So, you know, I'll go with default 35,000.
Yeah, nice to round it off, right? Thank you. Thanks, David. Welcome. Okay, over to Lorianne and Jennifer, and you can point to between the two of you who wants to, well, you could both introduce yourselves at the same time or one after the other.
Hi, yeah, I'll go first. It's Lorianne. My name is Lorianne Bertrand. I am the Recreation Coordinator for Nahanni Butte in the Northwest Territories.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Vitel from Nahanni Butte. The population is about 75 people here. That's a pretty cool.
Oh, okay. That's great. So you're actually smaller than Enterprise then, which is down by Hay River.
Yes.
Oh, you guys win them because I've had people from Enterprise in my learning events, and they always tell me it's the smallest community in NWT, but I guess Nahanni Butte tops that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Okay, and then we'll go over to Trista. Trista, you're welcome to speak up or pop your answer in the chat. And after Trista, we'll go to Serena and Scott.
Hi, I'm Krista Vizzo. I'm the recreation programmer in Ignace, Ontario. And I think our community is about 1,100 now. It used to be 12, 13, but we've lost a few.
Okay, are people moving away for work? Is that usually
happening? Yeah,
that's tough, right? So, well, thanks for joining us today, Krista. And Rebecca, I'm sorry we missed you in the order, so Tim popped you down at the end of the circle. I hope that's okay. So let's go to Serena. Over to Serena, and then Scott, and then Rebecca.
Hi, my name is Serena. I am the Youth Recreation Support Worker at Tom and Benford Nation, which is located in Whitehorse, Yukon. And the population for my First Nation is just over 1,000.
Oh, that's a lot bigger than what I thought. That's nice to know. Thank you. It's great that you guys have such wonderful recreation programs for your population, too. So thanks for joining us today, Serena. Scott, over to you, and then Rebecca.
Hi, Scott Cluce. I'm the Executive Director for the Hay River Youth Center in Hay River, Northwest Territories. And I've actually discovered a discrepancy, whereas the GNWT figures say our town is at about 3,800, which is up over the last census in 2016. The feds say we're down to 3,100, which is down from 35 where we were in 2016. So I don't know who to believe at this point, but we're somewhere in that range.
Well, that would be interesting to look on Stats Canada, because sometimes what they do, because I've done stats for BC, and I see sometimes when if I think Hay River is the only place in the north with the reserve, so sometimes they take those numbers out and put them somewhere else. So I wonder if that's got something to do. Tim says always go with GNWT though. So sure. Always better to have those higher numbers.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks,
yeah.
Scott. And over to you, Rebecca.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Penny, originally from Chesterfield and written in the boat, living in Matthew Drive, Newfoundland. And the Nunavut Arctic Sports Association, AD in training. The population for Chesterfield and Lit or Iguilig Arctic is either 375 or the 2016 census is 435, but I think it's closer to 375. And Matthew Drive is 1,700.
Oh, so you've gone from a smaller community to a bigger one.
A little bit bigger, yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you. It's thanks for joining us, and it's nice to hear about two different parts of the country in the same introduction, so thank you. Okay, I think that's everyone on our call today, so thank you for introducing yourselves. Last week, you shared some of the facts and stats about your community. Tim and I really enjoyed learning more about your communities and understanding some of the factors that influence the delivery of recreation in your communities. And if you have a chance, read what some of the other people said, especially if there's communities that you think might be similar to yours. Hopefully, you'll be able to use some of the information you pulled together last week in the future for things like grant applications or developing programs. It's always interesting to be able to attach a community profile to a grant application or to be able to justify a new program and getting funding for it because you know how many children and youth are in your community or you know how many elders are in your community. So keep on top of those numbers and use them as making a case for what you do in your work in recreation. So this week, we're going to explore some of the less obvious things about our communities. I like to think of these as the underlying characteristics. Things like values, like what's important to people, their traditions, their customs, their local culture, the different relationships between groups, families, neighborhoods, and also people's interests. All of those things influence how our communities engage in recreation and the types of recreation that our communities most enjoy. And that's what's so neat for me about recreation, is recreation does not look the same from one community to the next. And it's not because, we don't know how to do recreation. It's because our communities are different. and we have a lot of diversity. So it's really great to be able to sort of adjust or adapt in recreation to what our communities need. So when you get to know a community's personality by connecting with the people who live there, it helps you engage people as recreation participants and volunteers. But getting to know a community at this level requires time and patience and an open mind. In your smaller communities, recreation leaders often use an informal approach, like chatting around a campfire. This helps them build relationships, and for leaders who come from another community, it helps them learn about local culture, traditions, and protocols. So for those of you who did activity number 4, it asks you to share how you're most likely to connect with and learn about your community. And I found it really interesting to look at your answers. So the top 2 answers were chat with recreation program participants, and the next one was follow a community Facebook page or website. And Tim, I'm going to ask you to pop those 2 in the chat if you don't mind. The next 2 were holding a community meeting or inviting community members to come and see you and chat over tea. So I've lived in some small communities in the Yukon and elsewhere, and sometimes I find it's really easy to fall into a pattern of working with our citizens or people who live there that feels comfortable for us. And usually, as you can see from what you answered, this involves us expecting people to come and see us, not us going out to them. So I think that we sometimes need to push ourselves outside of our comfort zone and connect with people that we might not otherwise connect with. So I have a question that I'd like to go around our circle. And David, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to answer this question first, but I will put it in the chat. So if you're in the chat, you'll be able to see it.
Okay, I am.
You're in the chat. I'm just popping the question in. So my question to you, I'll just read the question, and David, I'll put you on the spot and let you answer it first. And I'm going to ask that everyone answers it in about 20 seconds or so, just so that everybody has a time to contribute. And if you prefer to type your answer into the chat, that's okay too. So my question is, what way of connecting with your community is most comfortable for you? And then how can you connect with people who don't come to your programs or events? So we're going to go, as Tim posted, David, and then Lorianne and Jennifer, Krista, Serena, Scott, and Rebecca, and then I'm going to come back to Tim and ask Tim to sort of reflect on what we've heard. So what's a comfortable way for you to connect with people, and how can you connect with people who don't come out to the programs that you offer? David, any thoughts about that?
Yes, I believe I'm unmuted, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I got a lot of star sixes here, so I'm going, okay, I think I am. So nonetheless, I like verbal, I like person-to-person connections. I find the people that I deal with most prefer that. Maybe it's a generational thing. The other way to connect with people that don't come to my program or event is to go to programs and or events that they are going to. So through conversations, you learn that, well, this event down at Kwanlundun's coming up, or this event at Canada Game Center is coming up, this type of thing. And just make yourself known. Walk around, introduce yourself, and find out what their interests are. And as program coordinator, then I try and see if I can arrange a program that meets their needs, their interest levels.
Thanks, David. And I think we're fortunate in Whitehorse because we have those sorts of opportunities, right? So I imagine it might be a little harder in a smaller community. But let's hear what other people have to say, and we'll keep that in mind because that's a good suggestion. So let's go to Lorianne and Jennifer. You have a very different size community than where David's coming from. So the question then again is, how do you connect, or what's most comfortable for you for connecting with your community? And if people don't come out to your programs and events, how could you connect with them? So Lori-Ann and Jennifer, you can choose to both answer or one or the other.
Hi, it's Lori-Ann. Well, we've done a lot of kind of sewing programs, game night programs, and recently we did a community raffle, and it was, even that was pretty difficult for community members to come out. I think it's just because they're still kind of COVID cautious, just because we are a very small community, and we have experienced last year, we got hit with COVID, so it spread it through the community pretty fast, so people are very kind of cautious about it. But we are most comfortable when we have a lot of people coming up to the gymnasium, even if it's just 10 people, that it's still quite a bit of the community for us.
Yeah, 10 people would be a lot of your community, and I can understand how in a small community you would, I like how you say COVID cautious. That's a great way of putting it. So thank you for pointing that out, because that is important to remember, because we didn't experience that before. So thanks a lot. And yeah, in small communities, sometimes having one person show up is awesome. So thank you, Lori-Ann and Jennifer. Let's move on then to Trista. Trista, I'm not sure if you want to speak up or pop your answer in the chat. What's a comfortable way for you of connecting with your community? And how could you connect with people who don't come out to your programs and events? Okay, so maybe Trista will pop that in the chat. Let's go to Serena. Serena, what are your thoughts about, you know, how do you find, what's a comfortable way for you to connect with your community? But if people don't come out to your programs and events, how could you reach out to them?
So lately, when we can't find a youth for programming, we just end up texting them. But we do advertise in many different ways, like we hand out flyers and go door to door and like just put it in their door. We do a Facebook post, and usually it's me just texting the youth directly.
Yeah, that's probably a great way, like getting people directly on text or Facebook. Trista said the same thing. She said chat with recreation participants and through the Facebook page, Instagram. It sounds like Trista uses a youth Snapchat account. So that's kind of neat. And mail out, just like you mentioned, Serena. And I think door-to-door is really important for reaching people who might not feel comfortable coming to your program. So thanks for sharing that. Let's go on to Scott then. So again, Scott, you're in a different size community. What are you most comfortable with for reaching out to people, and what's a way to connect to people who don't come to your programs or events?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a writer. That's kind of my background or part of my background. So I really like using the Facebook method and also creating, you know, catchy flyers and visual graphics and stuff to put out. That's me and my comfort level anyways. In terms of how to engage people who don't come out to our events, I do a lot of one-on-one, catch you at the grocery store, that sort of thing. That's when I do most of my face-to-face talking with people.
Yeah, grocery store is a good spot for sure. Oh, thank you for sharing that. And it's great if you've got some skills that, you know, you're able to use to communicate. That's a really big help, I think, in recreation. Thanks for that, Scott. Over to you, Rebecca. How about yourself? What's a comfortable way for you to connect with your community? And if people don't come out to your programs or events, how could you connect with them?
When I do go back to my hometown, Chester, I usually go straight to the school. I used to be a special needs assistant, so it's nice to see everyone there, the teachers, the students, and it's nice when you, it's a good feeling when the special needs students recognize you. And I go visiting Elders with my mom because she's up there too. And the other thing was in Chesterday, they usually do radio games or Facebook games for people that can't go out or have social anxiety.
That's great. So this school is something that nobody's mentioned yet, and that is a really important place because if you get the kids excited about something, they will go home and tell other people too. They'll tell their auntie or their friends or things like that. So the school, and I think we sometimes forget about the radio as well. So that's great. Thank you for adding those. I think Kamanapik and Andrew are both on the phone, maybe together. And so the question that we're asking right now is, what's a comfortable way for you to connect or talk to people in your community? And if people don't come to your programs or events or use your facilities, how could you reach out to them? Yeah. So Kamanapik and Andrew, if you want to jump in, that would be great.
Okay. The most comfortable way to connect with people for me is either having coffee, espresso, anything, while having a chat with people in my community. Sorry, guys. We can connect with people who do not go to programs is by having a community meeting, either through radio or in person, or even with a survey.
Hello.
That's great, thank you. And does Andrew have anything that he'd like to add to that?
I'm going to type it on chat.
That's great. And Kamanapik and Andrew, not to put you on the spot, but for our introductions today, we said names and then we shared with everyone what we think the population of our communities are. So I'm wondering if you could, I know I've just said both of your names, but do you remember from last week's activity what the population of Iglulik is?
Okay, I'll start with my introduction. Kumangapyang Matyap, Recreation Coordinator for the Municipality of Iglulik, and in 2021, the Census Survey deemed that the community of Iglulik's population is now, was 2049. There's definitely more than that right now. 2057 in 2021.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Next week, what we're going to do on our phone call is we're going to go around our circle from smallest to biggest community or from biggest to smallest. So I think so far on today's call, we've heard Lorianne and Jennifer, I think you said somewhere around 78 people in your community. So big difference in size from Iglulik to Nahanni Butte. So thank you for joining us. I'm glad you were able to get on the phone there. That's great. So I'm going to just share a little bit more background. I've got one more question, and then I'm going to ask Tim to take over after the next question. So let's take a moment now to consider some of the community characteristics that you might not find on your Stats Canada, on the government website, or in printed documents. So when you look at the presentation, there's three slides, slide 18, 19, and 20. And what they suggest is that you might want to learn more about your community's culture, local leadership, or participation patterns, the way people join in things. When you consider your community's culture, learn about the history, their language or languages, because there's multiple languages, values, what they like to eat, the traditions, the different celebrations, the art, music, and religion. And even if you grew up in the community, maybe there's something that you don't know. Perhaps there's a group
friend Tim, I forgot to buy one
for. David, can you just mute your phone, please?
Sorry.
Thanks. So you might learn some things about your community that you don't already know. I learned a lot about the Glutic from Kumanopic, Andrew, and Trevor's post. And if you guys haven't read what Kumanopic is, he wrote that they have a black box, and I had no idea what he meant. And there's a really good explanation. So it's worthwhile going and reading the profile that Kumanopic shared from the Glutic and learning what a black box is. I found that very interesting. Thank you. The other thing that we want to learn about our community is, what are the leadership styles? So that doesn't mean just only the people who are chief in council or mayor in council, but also the people who are considered role models in your community. So, Rebecca, you've talked a lot about your mom, and I bet she's a role model in her community, even if she's not an elected official. It just sounds, I get that sense of her being a very strong role model in your life as well as in your community. So it's good to connect with people that you think are good role models or are also influential. And then it's good to also observe and identify how people participate, not just what activities they go to do. Do they go to basketball or do they go to hockey? But also, who are the people who volunteer? Who are the people who coach? If people do volunteer, what do they like to do? And do people prefer special events or do they like programs? I was just talking to the community of Beaver Creek, which is a really small community way to the northwest of the Yukon on the border with Alaska. And he said all people want is a weekly special event that the whole community can come out to. They don't need regular programs. They just like having things where everybody can come out and participate. And their population is about the same size as Nahanni Butte, around 70 or to 80. So there's different patterns of how people like to participate. So there's lots of informal ways to get to know your community, meaning you don't have to read a book. You don't have to go on the internet or anything like that. When you try and connect with people and think about the characteristics of your community and reach out to people who don't come to your program, there might be things that you're surprised or that you learn. So I'm going to ask you a question, and you may not have an answer, and if you don't, it's okay to pass. But from getting to know your community better over the past week and a half, what is one thing that you've learned about your community that either has surprised or impressed you? So have you learned something new about your community that was surprising or that you went, wow, I'm really impressed with this? So I'm going to pop the question in the chat, and then I'm going to ask Lorianne and Jennifer, if you don't mind, if we start with you for this round, just so we're not always starting with the same person. So Lorianne and Jennifer, learning more about your community, have you found anything that surprised or impressed you?
Yeah, can you give us a minute just to think of the question really quick?
Absolutely. And the question's in the chat there. I'll just go on around the circle and then we'll come back to you. That's totally okay.
Okay.
So Trista, any thoughts? Is there anything that you've learned about your community that surprised or impressed you? And there might not be anything, and that's okay too, but I'm just wondering if there's anything you've learned, Trista, about your community. Okay, and I think Trista might pop in the chat. So, Serena, how about yourself? I know your community really well, but is there anything lately that you've learned about your community that is surprising or that you're really impressed by?
So, yeah, I know my community really well since I lived in Kuomintang. But I think from my last time that I was working here to now, the youth that I used to work with when they were kids, and now they're like 14, they're teenagers. Now they're talking in the GA and trying to push forward what the youth really want. And I thought that was pretty amazing that they really found their voice and are really driven to help other youth in their community. And that was pretty amazing to me.
Oh, that is so great. So, I like how you say found their voice, because that's such an important thing for our young people. So Thank you for sharing that. And that's one of the advantages to being in your community for a longer time. So thank you, Serena. Scott, how about yourself? I'm not sure if you grew up in Hay River or if you're newer there, but is there anything that you've learned about your community lately, that has surprised or impressed you?
I didn't grow up here. I moved here as an adult, but I've been here for about 15 years now. Going through the statistics, it kind of reminded me the research room, I should say, it kind of reminded me, for one thing, like, there's a really diverse business sector here. One of the reasons why our population goes up and down is that, we have lots of people coming for short periods of time to do work and that sort of stuff. And then the other thing that stuck out to me is that we're actually, as of the, I guess, last year's, census, we're at a somewhat of a historic unemployment rate. So our unemployment is down to 6.6%. So, there's lots of different work and there's lots of people working here. Those are some things that I learned.
That's great. And I think if I remember correctly, you have quite a good population of young adults in that, young to middle-aged adults in that sort of working age range, right, in your community?
Yeah, that's right. The biggest age grouping is the 25 to 44-year-old.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, and then that you can see how that statistic connects to the other ones that you just shared, like the diversity in business and different opportunities for work. So thank you, Scott. Rebecca, how about yourself? You can choose whichever community you'd like to talk about, but is there anything that you've learned lately that has surprised or impressed you about your community?
Nothing really surprised me. The main thing, I guess, was how Chesterfield got its name.
So are you saying you didn't know that before, or that you still find that surprising and it's a nice thing? Because I noticed you shared that in your post. Thank you.
Oh, no, like the English version of it. It says, named about 1749 after Philip Dormer, fourth Earl of Chesterfield. That was the main thing that surprised me.
Yeah. And that's from a long time back. That's strange. I like the Inuktitut name, though. It's hard to pronounce, I think. Thank you, Rebecca. Trista just posted that she always thought that her community was mostly seniors, and looking at the statistics, it surprised her that the amount of youth and seniors is almost equal. So, yeah, it's interesting when you start to look at some of the statistics, and then you start to dig in. I think, Trista, you had some different thoughts around recreation programming and what the seniors like is quite different to what people who are working adults like. So you can see how those things might surprise you, and then you can take that and what am I doing in recreation, or what could I be doing? That's great. Thank you. So Kumanathik and Andrew, I see Andrew popped an answer here that this is coming back to the question that a comfortable way for him is to connect with people out on the land. Yeah, I think people are comfortable on the land and having tea while talking to each other and just being outdoors. So thank you for that, Andrew. So Kumanathik, what I'm wondering, you did a really great job on your community profile. Is there anything that you learned while you did that surprised you about your community? And I think Kumanathik and Andrew, you guys are muted on the phone, so star 6 to unmute.
Oh.
There you go.
Thanks for letting me know that we were muted. There were a lot of things that I learned. Let me get it from my my notebook.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I found surprising was the 25 to 44 years olds are the most in here, starting at 5:30, and 15 to 64 years old makes up to 58.7% of the population here in Iglilik. That's what surprised me.
Yeah, were you thinking that it would be a younger population than that, that there would be more people in the younger ages?
Yes, I thought there were a whole lot more than the younger ones, but 0 to 14 years old only take up 38.4% of the population.
Yeah, and I found that interesting too, and I wonder if it's because Iglilik's a bigger community, so maybe more people stay in the community, whereas in smaller communities they have children and then children leave their community. So I'm not sure what the answer is, but that's great. That's something that you learned about your community, so thank you. So let's come back around. We've got David and then Lorianne and Jennifer. So David, was there something that you learned through this learning event so far that about your community that surprised you or impressed you? And you might be muted, David, so star six.
It's growing faster than I thought, and there's a wider variety of recreation going on in the community than I thought. You know, I've been here about 15 years, and I'm always surprised by the number of recreation opportunities that we have here at Whitehorse. So I would say the number of opportunities available.
That's great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And Lorianne and Jennifer, anything that came to your mind after listening to what other people said?
Yeah. Well, for our community, what really surprised us was the number of the population that we have because the statistics that were given to us, it's like 100, but then we sat down and we did it. We found out the numbers of the population is 78. So, and then we figured out what's the main age range in our community. So it really surprised me is the age range for us was 20 to 35. So then we kind of just, sat down and try to figure out, like, well, how can we get this age range to come out? Because it's really hard for us to have a lot of our community members to come out to our programs, especially if they're more direct into that age range. And also, what really impresses us is that when there's community feasts or sewing or bingo that we hold in our community, we have a lot more community members come out for that, for those three kind of events. And other events, there's just a limit of like about 10 or so.
So people like sort of the social things around food or bingo is always fun, or sewing, which is maybe more cultural. So yeah, really good ideas then. If you've learned that about your community and you've learned the age range, how can you weave things through other events and try and introduce people to other things too, or do you just stick with what they like to do? So good to learn about your community. Another conversation along those lines, you said most people are in the age range of 20 to 35, so I'm guessing that people probably have young children. So then I wonder if family events like suppers and feasts are a good way to get everybody out, because it means that you don't have to cook at home for your even children. So, yeah, there's lots there. Kim, I'm going to pass it over to you, and I'm going to let you sort of just do a little summary, and then roll on to, I think we're on slide 16, and coming back to the framework for recreation and going from there. So thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. Carolyn. I appreciate that. And the conversations, what people have learned is really, really interesting. And one of the things that really stood out for me in this conversation is that sometimes we don't, as recreation leaders, we don't see the population that that doesn't come out to join us. So for the fellows in Iglulik, I think, to be surprised at the discrepancy in the age of population to what we actually see, that's a reality that we all face. We are used to seeing the people that we see and can sometimes be surprised by the folks who are out there that don't partake in our offerings. And so coming back around to what Jennifer and Lorianne doing their own research, especially in smaller communities, really can have a lot of value. As they discovered, they found where the sweet spot or where the highest proportion of their population, the age range was residing. And like Carolyn points out, that might lead to some other ideas, such as there might be a lot of young families involved in that age range of people who are in the I think it was the sort of the 20s to mid 30s age range. So especially for the smallest communities, things can change very, very quickly in your population. If you've got bigger communities like Iglulik or even larger like Hay River or into the very large communities, people coming and going might not change the overall makeup of your population in a way that's easy to recognize, but for the smallest communities, it sure can. So thanks, everybody, for your input and for all the interesting things that you found out about your communities, including how they stick up their names. I think that's pretty great, too. I want to move on now, though, to slide 16. If you're still looking, following along in the slideshow, this is a slide that reminds us about the framework for recreation, and something that we've talked about in other learning events, too. One of the framework's goals is to make recreation, is to allow it to make a difference that it needs in our communities, to be supportive, and we want it to be accessible and inclusive. So I'd like you to take a moment just to listen to this short paragraph that's right out of the framework. More than any other service, recreation has the ability to reach all citizens and to bring people together in a non-threatening, pleasurable atmosphere. However, a rebalancing of recreation is necessary if it's to strategically address the barriers and constraints to participation faced by some people and to celebrate the rich diversity of Canada's population. So let's take a minute just to think about what rebalancing recreation means to us in the North. Rebalancing can mean lots of things, but one of the ways you might think about it is adjusting what we do as recreation leaders, or what I do as a recreation leader, so that I can better meet the needs of my community, rather than just trying to meet the needs of the same few people. Going back again to some of the comments that people have said about what they have learned about their communities might really speak to this. So I'm going to put a question in the chat here. The question is this. Oh, and Carolyn's already beat me to it. Thanks. As you get to know your community better, what do you want to change or what do you want to do differently? So we're going to go around. We're going to start. We're going to bump our order up again a bit. So Lorianne and Jennifer, you started off last time. I'm going to get Scott to start off this time. So we'll go Scott and Rebecca, and then Kumarakpik and Andrew, and then we're going to go to David, Lorianne, Jennifer, Trista, and Serena. We'll put that, I'll pop that into the chat too. Or it looks like Carolyn's doing it for me. So Scott, as you get to know your community better, what do you want to change or do differently?
I think one thing I would do differently is to try and increase the amount of personal interactions I have with people. So not relying so much on the impersonal Facebook posts and, you know, putting flyers up and that sort of thing, just the building relationships.
Yeah, building relationships is a really great one. It certainly helps us to leverage also the power of volunteerism and to find out really what people are really thinking. Sometimes you only get that through those short and in-person conversations. Thanks, Scott. Rebecca, how about you?
I think I'd start off with posts, probably through Facebook or the Trista Children's website to see what people are interested in, because which mainly for the older group, 60 and over, it's mainly bingo and poker right now, and not everyone plays those.
Sure. Are Facebook posts something that you would be doing differently?
I think I'd just ask the community what they want. Just start up little polls, and I think I'd just start that way.
Okay. Yeah, there are lots of ways of reaching out. And polls are a pretty good one, too. Thanks, Rebecca. I appreciate that. We're on to Kumanokpik and Andrew and Nagluwik, and then we'll be David and Lori and Jennifer after that.
Okay. What I want to do differently is that I want the school gyms now, and there's one problem for that, insurance. What I want to do differently is have the programs take place at the school gym and the events taking place at the community hall. And that way, the programs would have all the equipment required and ready to go. So, and up at the community hall, there'd be events like games and renters, or for college and Baffinland, those kind of events.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Kamasik. Andrew, do you want to chime in and chat, or do you want to add anything on the call? I'll wait for you to jump in on chat, maybe. And just go ahead, yeah.
CJC agrees with me.
Okay, great, thanks. Yeah, finding the right venue for what you want to do can have a huge impact, so I'm really glad that you're thinking in a new way about that. David, how about you? Is there anything that you are thinking differently about or anything that you want to change or do differently now that you've gotten to know your community a bit better?
Yes. What we're missing in this community is a means by getting people around. Our bus system here is the pits. And when you find programs for active seniors who don't drive, it makes it very difficult. So we need to have a better transit system to open up opportunities.
Yeah, thanks for that, David. Getting to know about your community can really reveal what some of the limitations and what some of the barriers are for people to take part in our programs. And sometimes they are easy to solve and sometimes a little bit more challenging. And this sounds like it might be a little bit more challenging. So maybe, David, I will send you a little message afterwards that might offer you some suggestions on how you can approach dealing with this problem. But thanks for that. For that suggestion, and it was really great. We're going to go on next to Lorianne and Jennifer in the Honey Butte, and then Trista and Serena. Lorianne and Jennifer, I think you might be on mute. If you press star 6, I'll take you off.
Yes. Hello. Yeah. To answer the questions, what I would like to do differently, or what we would like to do differently, is to be more organized in planning community activities and events, such as planning or organizing a walking group for once a week and whatnot, just to have more people interact and to be more active in the winter. Because we do also do the walking challenge, but we also want to start doing that because I've noticed lately a lot of a lot more people are starting to walk. So it would be really great for us to do coordinating walking groups. Because we do have some really great trails, but lately there's been wolf sightings, so I think it would be really great to do walking groups so that, that they don't come across animals, that they're trying to go for a nice walk out or whatnot.
That's really great. And if you want some help in trying to plan more walking events in your community, then absolutely feel free to reach out to me after the call, and I can probably help you to set some of those up. You're doing the right stuff right now by being part of the leadership program, because this is going to help you to become more organized and to, especially when it comes to planning your events. So you're doing the right stuff. One thing I might offer is to maybe put up, if people in the community have animal sightings, to put a post up, a poster, or make a post on the Facebook page to let folks know, which is something that happens in my community, and lets people know just to be extra aware if they're out walking. But thanks for those comments. I really appreciate them. Those are great.
And also, also Jennifer, and I have to head out early. That's all right.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Oh, Jennifer and I have to head out early, so...
Okay.
Would that be
great.
Okay?
Great, thanks for being on the call. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on the call, and if you want to check out the last little bit of the call on the recording afterwards, feel free to do so. Thanks for being part of our call today.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. So we are on to Trista, then Serena. Trista's answered into the chat. I'd like to open up our arena complex to the public more often so the community could use it as a drop-in and take advantage of the facility at their convenience. Thanks, Trista. That's great. I encourage you to check out Scott's post about Lights On. Lights On is a really great community-based program that takes advantage of recreation spaces that maybe aren't being used as well as they could be. And that might be a way for you to encourage the community to be able to open up the facility for alternative uses. Thanks, Trista, for putting your post in. And Serena, how about you?
So I am really wanting community recreation to open up, because right now we only have the capacity and the staffing to do youth recreation, but I hear a lot from community members, like, why can't they utilize our new recreation building? And I totally agree. It's just that we just don't have the staffing for it. And I know that in the past, like, we have had community bingos and whatnot, but that was usually on Zoom. They really want to use their new recreation building.
Sure, yeah. No, I totally understand that, and I recognize that the challenges that staffing poses, for sure. So thanks for that, and I sympathize for sure. We're almost wrapped up here. We're just about out of time, so I want to take just a moment just to go back and take a look at, whoops, I'm on the wrong, yeah, oh, here we go. And Caroline's posting in, popping into the chat to Serena that what a great point that is, that we need adults to participate in recreation. It says they are the ones who can be role models for youth in providing and promoting that healthy lifestyle. So thanks for that, Caroline. I just wanted to quickly go over again what the required learning event is for this for the end of this week that's due on Sunday. So if you could, again, just to refresh and to review, take a look again at slides 18 to 20, do activity number 4, and then choose three to five of the questions that are posted there, and use those questions to create, or you can create your own, and check in with some community members for about 5 minutes of their time. Explain that you want to ask about community recreation experiences, and then use your questions to explore what their ideas and what their stories are. Make sure you thank them for their time. And if you can, please summarize in a post what you have learned. You don't have to include names or personal details from folks, but do describe some of their ideas for making recreation more inclusive, accessible, and more meaningful. So please make sure that you share your posts in the forum. Remember, there are some suggested questions there. Don't use them all. Just pick 3 or 4 or 5 and use those as part of your interview process. And if you need help with any of those, then feel free to reach out to Carolyn or I, or answer or ask a question in the forum. But we're out of time, so thank you all. This wraps up our conference call, and this is going to be the last of our calls for RS-102. So please take a few minutes at the end of this to complete the feedback form as well after Activity 7 in the afternoon. If you would like to stick around after the call for comments, please feel free to. At the end of this call as well, I'd like to encourage you to challenge yourself by learning something new about your community every month. There's always another side to every story, and there's always a way to adjust recreation programs and services so that they include the people who are more likely to experience barriers. And for sure, David was great at illustrating one of those, for sure. So remember, please complete this week's required learning event by Sunday. If you have any questions, do stay on the line after the recording stops. Carol and I will stick around for a few minutes. So thank you all. Kwana, merci, masi cho. Have a great week, the rest of the week, everybody, and thank you for being on the call with us. And thanks to Carolyn.